It's a tremendous schuss, an opportunity, to hear from Rabbi Ari Leibowitz this morning. Rabbi Leibowitz is both the Rav and Mar Da'asra of the Beis Knesset of North Woodmere, as well as head of the Smicha program at REITS, otherwise known as Yeshiva University. The topic of today's talk will be COVID-19, looking back, looking forward. This year has been dedicated in loving memory of Sanford Kent, Shalom Shachni ben Moshe Olav HaShalom. Sanford of blessed memory was a beloved member of the Pittsburgh Jewish community for many years. He was a balabayas, having raised all his children to love a Torah lifestyle. He was a businessman of the highest ethical standards, a lawyer, and a United States Air Force veteran. He spent much time in Torah studies and formed a special kesher with Rabbi Nachman Yeager, formerly of the Pittsburgh Kollel. So obviously, the shir should be a schus for him, and as well as for a schus for, unfortunately, all of those that perished in Meron and those that still need a refuah shalema. So without further ado, Rabbi Leibowitz,
thank
floor
you
is yours.
Much. Thank you very much. Thank you, Rabbi Shon. Thank you for inviting me, and I want to thank all of you for coming to learn together this morning. And the Divrei Torah that we share should be an Aliyas Neshama for Sanford Katz, and as well as for the for all of the victims of the terrible, terrible tragedy from this past Thursday night. You know, it's very difficult to get together and learn Torah with a group of people who are all still reeling from the terrible tragedy in Meron this past Thursday night without in some way addressing those feelings. Yet at the same time, this is something that I feel that each family has to internalize on their own, each community has to internalize on their own, and it would be entirely inappropriate for me as an outsider to share with you how I happen to be processing, or not processing in this case, in many ways, the tragedy that that just occurred, and that unfortunately is ongoing with so many cholim still in the hospital. So I think we're going to stick to the original script, but just to mention that an idea that I heard from in the name of Rav Soloveitchik, I don't think I've ever seen it in his writings, but I've heard from Talmidim of Rav Soloveitchik that really resonated with me on an emotional level, and that is that the Bala Ma'or at the end of Maseches Pesachim raises the question why it is that we do not recite the bracha of Shehechiyanu when counting Sfiras HaOmer. The bracha of Shehechiyanu is recited all the time when you have a mitzvah that comes up only once a year, when we have Megillah, when we have Shofar, when we have Lulav. We always recite a Shehechiyanu. Why would we not recite a Shehechiyanu when it comes to Sfiras HaOmer? So the Bala Ma'or has his answer, and many others have their answers. And Rav Soloveitchik suggested that the bracha of Shehechiyanu necessarily indicates that we've arrived, that we've already arrived at the goal, at the destination, and higiyanu lazman hazeh. We've achieved it. We're there. And the nature of Sfiras HaOmer is such that we are counting toward. And as long as we're counting toward, we're not there yet. The goal is Kabbalah Satorah. The goal is Shavuos. Up until the point of Kabbalah Satorah, up until the point of Shavuos, we're only counting toward. We're trying to get there, but we aren't there yet. And this point particularly resonated with me, as so many of us, certainly in America, and even more so in Israel, have assumed that we've arrived. Meaning we've just gone through a year and change, more than a year, of some of the most terrible times we lived through in our lifetimes, and have seen some terrible, terrible things. And we thought that with the great blessing that the Ribbono Shel Olam has given us, the vaccine, which is more effective than we ever could have hoped it would be, we thought that higiyanu, that we've arrived, that the tsaros are all ending. We assumed Lag BaOmer, the day that Avelus is supposed to be over, the Avelus of Sfira is supposed to be over, was going to be a celebration like no other. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu reminds us that we're not ready for a Shehechiyanu, that we're not yet higiyanu lazman hazeh, that we're in the process, but there are peaks and valleys. There are ups and downs, and we're still in Galus, and as long as we're still in Galus, there are going to be times of great sorrow for Klal Yisrael. And this time is certainly no different. And even as we're emerging from COVID, slowly, deliberately, responsibly, emerging from COVID, we do realize that the galus continues, and because there's no Beis HaMikdash, there are tzaros that are going to that do happen. They shouldn't happen anymore, but there are tzaros that do happen in Klal Yisrael, and this one is just so overwhelming. It's so difficult to be able to wrap our minds around. But I want to talk instead about the return after COVID. Each community is in a different place as far as this is concerned, so it would be entirely inappropriate for me to discuss specifics of exactly when and where and how one should return to shul and to learning and to communal shiurim and life, regular life as we knew it before last March. It would be entirely inappropriate. I would rather talk begadol, in the bigger picture, what the value of a shul is, why it is that it's so important that throughout the generations, throughout the centuries, we always had shul. We always, Jews always got, even though, yes, the mussar we heard for the last year and change was that your home becomes a Beis Medrash, your home becomes your shul, and that's what we needed to hear, and that is true to a certain extent. The Mikdash Ma'at became our homes. Our homes became the Mikdash Ma'at. But yet, we know that that wasn't ideal. We know that in an ideal world, there's supposed to be a shul, and there shouldn't be. In an ideal world, if everybody is safe and everybody is healthy, scattered minyanim all over the place, with rabbis maybe running from one place to the other to be able to say hello to all the congregants, or maybe not being able to make it to all the places, we know that that's not the way it was meant to be. So I want to discuss a little bit about the value of shul. And even before I get into any of the halachic value, I find that in those communities that are opening up, that are largely vaccinated and are opening up more, sometimes the last thing to return is the return to shul, and that is most unfortunate. If the return to everything else, even kiddushes and things like that, happens before the return to shul, it calls us to question where our priorities really are. The return to shul should not lag behind those other things that are more optional than the return to shul. And I'm not even speaking from a halachic context right now, although we'll get to that in a moment, but just from an emotional context. Considering what we just experienced this past weekend, there's nothing quite as comforting as community. You know, I've never really visited, I only visited Pittsburgh in passing through town. I visited two places, the pizza shop and the baseball stadium, both excellent. But I don't think I even walked into a shul when I was there with my boys. We were just there for a few hours. But everything I know about the Pittsburgh community is that it is a community with a heavy emphasis on community, with a heavy emphasis on togetherness, where people look out not only for each other, not only for members of the...
Oh. Sorry, Elise, we just accidentally... Oh, there we go.
Okay, I apologize. I don't know when I got muted, but... whatever you missed was absolutely brilliant. You missed the best part.
From the baseball community right there. It was just 10 seconds.
What could be better than the Pirates? Okay, so it was actually a year that the Pirates were very good. The everything I know about the Pittsburgh community is that it's a community that puts a heavy emphasis on community, not only taking care of each other, but taking care of many visitors, of people who come from outside for medical reasons or for other reasons. And I think intuitively, the members of this community recognize the need for togetherness, the need to be with each other, especially in challenging times. You know, I have a son who, my second son, is learning in Yeshivat Shalavim this year. And as I'm sure you all know, one of the victims of this terrible tragedy was a Shana Aleph student, American student from Teaneck, New Jersey, in Yeshivat Shalavim, Danny Morris, Alav HaShalom. And my son told me right before Shabbos, they found out, just like maybe an hour or two before Shabbos, about his fate, about what had happened. And half the yeshiva was supposed to be out for Shabbos. The country's opening up. They were able to go visit different people, relatives and the like, for Shabbos. And they had made plans to be away for Shabbos. And many boys were already out for Shabbos. And they just all returned. They started coming back to yeshiva an hour before Shabbos because they felt that they needed to be with their chaverim, that specifically in difficult times, they needed to be with their friends, they needed to be together. And that sense of needing to be together, of needing each other, is a it's a human experience, but certainly a Jewish experience as well. And Shul provides us with that experience. We should never need it in such difficult times, but it is something. A friend of mine commented that he wished that he was still learning in yeshiva when such a thing happens, because in yeshiva he knows that he would be able to be around friends, and that a rebbe would get up and would speak and contextualize for him from an emuna and bitachon perspective. So certainly, for adults, once we're out of yeshiva, the place where we experience that, where we experience that sense of community, is in our shuls. So the idea that a shul is important on an emotional level, there's no doubt about that. However, I'd like to discuss some of the halachic ways that shul is critical for us, and it's not just that it's something that helps us out emotionally. The halacha clearly strongly prefers tefillah b'tzibur. Now, tefillah b'tzibur is a preference, it is not necessarily an absolute obligation, that's a machlokas aposkim, but it's certainly a significant halachic preference. What is less known is that tefillah bebeis hakneses, davening in a shul, brick and mortar shul, is also a major halachic preference. Meaning people often assume, well, if I can get 10 Jews together and I could daven at a wedding, I could daven at wherever I choose to daven, that's ideal. That's davening with a minyan. What could be better than that? Just as there is a halachic preference for davening with a minyan, there is also a halachic preference for davening in a shul. And there are many reasons for that. The first reason that I'd like to highlight is the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Mishlei, Perek Yudalid, where the pasuk tells us, "Birav am hadras melech," that mitzvos are best performed in a large group. The glory of God is said to be enhanced when we serve him in a large crowd. It's fascinating that in halacha we find that concept comes up all over the place. Anyone who learns Daf Yomi, you'll find the citation of Berav Am Hadras Melech all over Shas. Brachos Daf Nun Gimel, Psachim Daf Samach Daled, Rosh Hashanah Daf Lamed Beis, Yuma Daf Chavav, Yuma Daf Ayin, Sukkah Daf Nun Beis, Megillah Daf Chav Zayin, Zvachim Daf Yud Daled, Menachos Daf Samach Beis. All over the place, there's this emphasis on Berav Am Hadras Melech. But if you really look carefully at each place that it comes up, it turns out that there are three different formats that Berav Am Hadras Melech, that the idea of serving God in multitudes, takes three different forms, three different modes of Berav Am Hadras Melech. One is that it's used to teach that several people, each of whom are performing a mitzvah, each person is doing the mitzvah on their own, but when they do it in proximity to each other, all simultaneous to each other, that's a greater glory to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That comes up in the Mishnah in the third parak of Maseches Bikurim. Bikurim are the first fruits that we bring to Yerushalayim. We have the first fruits from the Shivas Aminim, the seven species that Eretz Yisrael is praised with. Everyone has to take their first fruits and parade them into Yerushalayim. So you know what they would do? Each person who has such fruits to bring has a mitzvah of bringing Bikurim. But you know what they would do? They would all gather together outside of Yerushalayim, and then parade together into Yerushalayim. Why do they do that? Each person on their own schedule. Shouldn't they just bring the fruits to the Mizbeach, bring the fruits to the Beis HaMikdash? But no, if 1,000 individuals do something, it's not the same as a group of 1,000 people doing it together. So each person is doing their individual mitzvah, but when your individual mitzvah is done in the context of a group, that glorifies Hashem to a greater degree. A second format that we have of Berav Am Hadras Melech, in other instances, it's used to teach that it shows great respect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to Hashem, when instead of having a single person perform a mitzvah, a group of people divide the parts of the mitzvah among themselves. We know this from something that's almost a universal practice in shuls that sort of fell by the wayside during COVID because of safety concerns. And I know here in New York, it's completely come back, but that is doing psicha. When we open up the Aron Kodesh, why not have whoever is going to lane, the Bal Kore, let him go, open up the Aron Kodesh, take the Torah out, walk into the Bima, and then open up the Torah and start reading from it? Why is it that we have one person that opens the Aron Kodesh, does psicha, he hands the Sefer Torah to a chazan, who then brings it to the bima, and then the balkorei opens it up and reads from it. Why do we have three separate people involved in the process of just opening up a Torah? One person is perfectly capable of handling it. But we find that there is such a concept of berav am, hadras melech, that even if there's just going to be one mitzvah that's done, to allow multiple people to participate, to divide up the mitzvah. There's even a discussion about a bris milah. You know, there's something out of bris called a kvater, that you have the person who brings the baby in. So there's a tshuva in the Mishnah Halachas from Menashe Klein. Someone asked him, maybe they should just pass the baby around the whole room, give everyone the chance to bring the baby just a bit closer to the milah. So Menashe Klein was an old Hungarian posek. He said, no, it's dangerous for the baby. And with so many hands touching the baby, someone's going to drop the baby, someone's going to breathe on the baby. You can't do that to a baby. But if safety concerns were not a concern, then yeah, in a chinami, that would be a beautiful thing to do, just like we do when we open the Aron Kodesh. Where do we find that in Shas? So again, for those who do Daf Yomi, or even if you don't do Daf Yomi, you should know the Gemara says in Maseches Pesachim and Daf Samach Dalit that when we would bring the Korban Pesach, not only would every Jew bring their, or every group of Jews bring their Korban, but when they would have the dam, the blood of the Korban that had to be sprinkled on the Mizbech, instead of me bringing the dam from my Korban and just splashing it on the Mizbech, there was an assembly line of Kohanim, and the cups would go from one Kohen to the next Kohen to the next. The Kohanim never actually moved. It just was passed from one Kohen to the next Kohen. Only the last Kohen actually took a step toward the Mizbech to fulfill Halacha Beregel, and then it would sprinkle the blood on the Mizbech. Why do they have to pass it from one to the next to the next to the next? Can't just someone bring it to the Mizbech? Because we try to get as many people involved as we can, even if it's just a single mitzvah. And then there's a third element of Baravam Hadras Melech. We find that even just having a large crowd observing a mitzvah is a kiddush shem shemayim, is a kiddush Hashem. The fact that people are watching a mitzvah happen, even if they're not participating at all, we find this in Maseches Yuma and Daf Ayin. The Gemara tells us that the Kohen Gadol would read from the Torah on Yom HaKippurim, and the crowd assembled to watch him read. And that's considered Berav Am Hadras Melech, not because they're learning, but because he's doing a mitzvah and they're providing an audience for the mitzvah. You know, Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he was asked about a fairly common case in communities where there's a mix of religious and not religious Jews, where my brother, for instance, is a moel in Palo Alto, California, Northern California. So there are a lot of Israelis who are not Torah observant that live in Palo Alto or in the area, in San Jose and the like. And what they'll often have is they'll have a baby and they'll want to do a bris milah, and if the baby was born on Shabbos, they'll want to do the bris on Shabbos. So my brother always has the shaila, he always has the difficult question. Do you perform the bris on Shabbos as the halacha says you should, knowing that it's going to cause people to drive to the bris, and there's going to be a photographer there, and there's going to be all sorts of chilul Shabbos that happens at the bris? Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he discusses this topic, and leaving out conclusions one way or the other, Rav Moshe Feinstein points out that there is an inherent flaw in providing an audience for Chil Shabbos. Even if Chil Shabbos is going to happen anyway, to have a crowd gathered to watch it happen is itself a Chil Shem Shemayim. It's the flip side of Berav Am Hadras Melech, that when one person does a mitzvah and other people watch the mitzvah, that's a Kiddush Hashem. When a person does an Avera and other people watch the Avera, provide an audience for the Avera, that is a Chil Hashem. So we have this concept of Berav Am Hadras Melech, and that's applied broadly by the post to several different mitzvos. For example, the Bir Alach and Simon Kufnun Hay suggests that we should ideally learn Torah among a large group of people rather than privately. A person learns Torah in the privacy of their own home, and it's wonderful. It's a great mitzvah to learn Torah privately. But there's something about the experience of learning Torah together that it creates a certain energy, a certain electricity in the air. There's a reason why yeshivos have batei medrash, why shuls try to get people to together for shiurim and for learning sessions together, because when you come together it creates a certain energy. You know, I'm involved in a program, I don't know if they have one in Pittsburgh yet, called Smichat Chaver, which is run by Rav Eliada Goldwicht from Israel, and it's a really a wonderful learning program. And for a year we were on Zoom, and then we went to a Zoom option and an in-person option, and after Pesach Rav Eliada said no more Zoom option, now it's going to be only in person. For whatever reason, that was the decision that he made. Now, once that decision was made, I have to tell you, the experience was entirely different. We should realize Zoom has been a great bracha. I never would be able to talk in Pittsburgh on a Sunday morning, where I'm also speaking in Los Angeles, and I'm also speaking in Woodmere, and in Yeshiva, and I have two weddings. Amazing! And I could do it all because of Zoom. Zoom is an amazing, amazing bracha. But at the same time, we have to realize that it's not the ideal way to learn Torah, and that when it is safe, and when it is proper, and when it is appropriate for each community, the ideal way to learn Torah is to come together to learn Torah. That first Smicha Chaver Shir that we had after Pesach in person, it was electric. It was something that was unbelievable. And that's what the Bir Alecha writes, that Barov HaMahadras Melech applies to learning Torah as well. Shulchan Aruch writes in Simit Sadi that we should always try to daven in a shul with a tzibur, because Barov HaMahadras Melech, Magen Avram says, that means even if you have a minion in your home, you should try to daven together with the tzibur in shul. As Barov HaMahadras Melech, Rav Sternbach in Tshuvas VaHanhagos Chelek Aleph Simon Kuf Chav Zayin rejects the practice of making I don't know if it happens in Pittsburgh. In New York, it's very common that on a Motzai Shabbos you have a shul, and all of a sudden it splits up into different Marav Minyanim, because there are multiple people that have Yartzeit that week, and everyone who has Yartzeit wants to take the Amud for the Marav of Motzai Shabbos. Rav Sternbach says that it's incorrect, it's improper. The people are supposed to daven together. That's why we have rules on the books about who gets the Amud. So you figure it out. You make shalom between them, and you figure out, and people should be forgiving about these things, and figure out some system that works. But you don't split up a crowd. You don't split up a shul unnecessarily. Then there's another element of shul, not only Barav HaMahadras Melech, that which is called Shachin Ra. The Gemara Maseches Brachos and Daf Ches relates that anyone who has a Beis HaKnesses to daven in, and in a city, and chooses not to enter the shul, is considered a Shachin Ra, a bad neighbor. And this is quoted in Shulchan Aruch and Simit Sadi. And the Chayyadam explains, what's the idea of a bad neighbor? Why is that, of all the things to call someone who chooses not to go to shul, why a bad neighbor? I would think, you know, maybe someone who's not so spiritually inclined, maybe someone who's passing up on an opportunity to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That makes sense. Bad neighbor? Bad neighbor is like, you know, the person comes over and asks if they can borrow an ingredient, and I say no, I'm using it for myself, you know, or the person accidentally burnt all their food for Shabbos and I don't invite them to come to my house, to share with me. Remember our first Shabbos married, my wife and I, our first Shabbos married, I came home from Friday, our first Shabbos that we were home in our own apartment married, after Shabbos Shavu Brachos, I came home from Friday night davening, and I saw my wife sitting on the couch, surrounded by an Igros Moshe, Shmir Shabbos Ki Hilchasa, a Mishnah Berurah, all of her Hilchas Shabbos notes all around her, and my wife is not the biggest masmid in the entire world, she's the most wonderful person in the entire world, she's not the biggest masmid in the entire world. And I said, just reviewing? And she said, oh, we got some problems. The light was on in the fridge, and all the food was left in the oven, and we didn't even know if you were allowed, and the oven was on. We didn't know if you were allowed to open the oven. I knew nothing at the time, so I couldn't even help. My wife knew a lot more than I did about Hilchas Shabbos. So all we knew is that we didn't know, and we had no food for Shabbos, and we had no way to access the food for Shabbos. So we went to a neighbor, and neighbors who are dear friends of ours to this very day, they took us in for Shabbos. They whatever food they had, they split with us, and we had a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos together. That's a good neighbor. That's what a neighbor does. But why, if I don't go to shul, am I a bad neighbor? So the Chayyadim explains that good neighbors visit each other. Good neighbors, if they know that someone is isolated, if they know that someone is there and maybe could use a visit, they go and they check in on them. That's if a person keeps to themselves in their own home, that's antisocial behavior. That's inexcusable in our relationship with man and in our relationship with God. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there and the Shechina is waiting for us, we're supposed to visit. We're supposed to check in. Mishnah Berurah points out that the Prima Gadim raises the possibility that we're even required to daven in a shul if the shul doesn't have a minyan, in order to avoid the title of Shachin Ra. You know, there's a remarkable Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, Rav Meir Tversky Shlita, one of the outstanding Rashi Yeshiva in YU, pointed out on Thursday night, as he was trying to contextualize for the Talmidim the terrible tragedy that was unfolding before our eyes, he pointed to a Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, in the third paragraph of Hilchos Tshuva, where the Rambam describes those who are Ein lo chelek l'olam haba, people who do not have a portion in Olam Haba. You know, we like to sing and talk about the Mishnah that tells us, Kol Yisrael Yesham Chelek Olam Haba. That's the first line of the Perek, and the whole rest of the Perek is, except for, and it gives like a long list of exceptions of people who do not have a Chelek in Olam Haba. So the Rambam describes who does not have a Chelek in Olam Haba, and one of them is HaPoresh Midarkei HaTzibur, someone who separates himself from the Tzibur. So the Rambam says, what is that? What's HaPoresh Midarkei HaTzibur? Says the Rambam, we are not talking about someone who commits averos. The person could have never done an avera in his life, and he's still considered poresh midarkei hatzibur. That's the Rambam, that's not me. The Rambam says, never. How? How is he poresh midarkei hatzibur if he never did an avera in his life? Says the Rambam, if he does not live as part of the Jewish community. If he lives apart from the Jewish community, that is a poresh midarkei hatzibur. And then he defines, what does it mean to live apart from the Jewish community? He says, Eino nichnas imam bitzaram. He does not enter into their tsar together with them. A good neighbor, when someone else is suffering, suffers along with them. When someone else is struggling, struggles along with them. If what my neighbors are doing is their business, and what I'm doing is my business, then that is a poresh midarkei hatzibur that the Rambam says is ein lo chelek li'olam haba. In fact, you know, that's really what nichum avelim is all about. You know, one of my talmidim pointed out to me on Friday that what's the halacha by nichum avelim? We all know the halacha. You go to be Menachem and Avil, you go to pay a shiva call, as we, I think, unfortunately express it in English. I'm not sure where that, I don't like that expression. You know, you're paying anybody, you're not, you're going to do a, you're going to connect to a friend who's struggling. So you go to pay a shiva call, to be Menachem Avil, to perform the mitzvah of Nichum Avelim, and the halacha is that you're not supposed to speak first. You're not supposed to initiate conversation, which is a most curious halacha, because the Gemara darshins from the pasuk Vahanig Dom that one of the indicators of an avel is someone who's not speaking. That an avel should not be too talkative. That an avel, the mourner himself, is meant to be silent. So if the mourner is supposed to be silent, and you're silent, so how does that make sense? How are you being menachem? You're being silent. You're not saying anything. And one of my talmidim pointed out, no, that's exactly the point. You are acting like an avel. You're going to be menachem avel, and you're essentially expressing by refusing to initiate conversation that I too am in a form of avelus, not as intense as yours, but I'm suffering along with you. And that is the nechama. A shachin tov is someone who doesn't have all the answers for his neighbors, but as someone who struggles along with their neighbors. And therefore, says the Gemara, a person who does not visit the shul, who does not connect with Hashem, is a shachin ra to the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. Just like we have to be a shachin tov to other people, we have to be a shachin tov to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And then, of course, there's the value of shul, probably the one that Chazal emphasized the most, is Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. It's the strongest argument to against a more permanent utilization of what we call like the outdoor minyanim or whatever other types of minyanim are popping up. There are so many halachas that govern the usage, the structure, and the honor of a shul that it seems that Chazal were very interested in having Jewish people daven in a place that has Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. The Gemara Maseches Brachos and Davav tells us that a person's tfilos are only heard in shul. The Lech Mishnah says that it doesn't mean only, you know, your tfilos can be heard outside of shul as well, but it means that it's a much greater guarantee that the tfilos will be heard in shul. And that's not only a function of the Kedusha of the shul, but also a function of the ease with which one can concentrate in shul. Shulchan Aruch writes, Yishtadel Adam Lispalel Bebeis HaKnesses Im HaTzibur, that a person should make an effort. It should be something that's worth making an effort for, to daven in a shul together with the tzibur. Then you have the Gemara Maseches Brachos and Davav that tells us that one is supposed to be Koveya Makom L'Tvila. You're supposed to have a set place for Tvila. And the Gemara goes even further and says, Kala Koveya Makom L'Tvila. So if someone has a set place for Tvila, he is considered an anav, a tzaddik and a Talmud of Avram Avinu. That's pretty high praise just for davening in one place. An anav, a tzaddik, and a Talmud of Avram Avinu. You know, the Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah points out that the Gemara Sanhedrin Daf Yod Aleph has very similar praise for Shmuel HaKatan. Shmuel HaKatan was like an all-time tzaddik. He was someone of extremely high stature, and all I got to do is pick a seat in shul and daven there, and that's it. And then I earn the same praise. It's odd that anybody who establishes a consistent place to daven merits that same praise that was used to describe such a tzaddik like Shmuel HaKatan. If you look in Brachos Tav Chav Tes, Shabbos Lamed Gimel, Tainus Tav Chav Hey, you learn a little bit about Shmuel HaKatan. This was not a simple Jew. So Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah suggests that the insistence on davening in this way is not a sufficient mitzvah to earn those accolades. Rather, it's indicative of the kind of Jew you probably already are. Meaning sometimes people feel a sense of entitlement in their tefillah. You know, we feel that we deserve it. We deserve, you know, Hashem, whatever I've been through in life, I deserve more. You know, we approach tefillah like Amazon Prime. You know, I'd like one of those, and you know, if you could just deliver it, and it better not be later than 2 days, because then I'll get frustrated. Where's the convenience in this shopping? And we assume that there has to be an answer to our tefillah, and that we deserve an answer to our tefillah. Koveh makom l'tefilaso, says Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah, is a person indicating, and Tzlach explains this in greater detail, is a person indicating that he's not entitled to anything, and therefore he needs to make sure that his tefillah is perfect in order to connect to Hashem or to expect anything from Hashem. An arrogant person would assume that he would have God's ear wherever he chooses to daven and whenever he chooses to daven on his schedule. Whereas a humble person realizes that it's a privilege just to be in the room. It's a privilege just to have God's ear at all. And whether his answer is yes or no, whatever his answer is, it's a privilege just to be speaking with the Almighty, just to be interacting with the Almighty. And in that sense, a person is Hey Onav, Hey Chasin, Mitalmido, Shalavram Avinu. There are other issues that come up as well. The Gemara Maseches Brachos and Daf Ches tells us that a shul, a Beis HaKnesses, is a place that is destined to provide a person with the great bracha of Arichos Yamin. The Gemara tells us that Rabbi Yochanan was surprised to learn that there were elderly people in Bavel. Because after all, L'man Yibru Yimechem, that it's supposed to be only in Eretz Yisrael, the Pasuk says. So how could it be that people have long life outside of Eretz Yisrael? So then they told Rabbi Yochanan, no, these people go to shul all the time. You know, sometimes in shul, it's the oldest people in the shul that are there first and that stay the latest and that spend the most time in the shul. Well, that's not an accident. The people who weren't doing that didn't make it that long, says Rabbi Yochanan. The people who spend the most time in shul, that's a skula for Arichus Yamin. My grandfather, should live and be well, just had his 93rd birthday, lives in Rehovot in Eretz Yisrael. I remember when maybe 5 years ago I went to visit him. So he would always go to shul like 2 hours before Mincha because he had the Ein Yaakov shir and he has the Daf Yomi shir and he has to give out all the Gemaras to all the people. I said, why do you have to be the one to give out all the Gemaras to everybody? You know, you're 88 years old. He said, first of all, I'm the youngest person in the whole shir. You know, that's that was the group that he learned with. He also said, what would I rather be doing? So he'd climb up on a bench, which was like hard to watch, and he would, when I was there, I did it, but I don't know what happened when I wasn't there, and get all the Gemaras and hand them out to people. Rabbi Yochanan heard that there are elderly people in Bavel. He said, oh, must be, because they go to shul. There's a shocking Yalkut Shimoni on Parshas Ekev. Tells a story of a woman who is very old, and her quality of life had degenerated to the point that she wanted to die. And she told Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta that she was always careful to daven in a shul. And he said, well, if you really want to die, you better stop doing that. And then you'll see in short order, that will be the end of it. And in fact, that's what happened. She fell ill and she died afterwards. And also, as shuls begin to open, shuls rely on having people there. If many people choose not to come back, I'm not talking about for safety reasons. I'm talking about once everything is deemed safe and it's deemed appropriate and we've returned to other areas of our life. And the reason I'm emphasizing this is because I speak to Rabbanim throughout the country. This has not been a major problem in North Woodmere, but I speak to Rabbanim throughout the country, and it's one of their top issues that they're concerned about, is that people have gone back to everything else. People who didn't we're not overly concerned about the virus and the threat of the virus in any other stage, but they're really enjoying the outdoor minyanim. They're really enjoying not having to be in shul. And that's a real problem. It's a real problem because the shul suffers from that. I'm not even talking about membership dues and things of that nature. Just from a subpar crowd, it has a debilitating effect on the entire atmosphere of the tefillah. Not to mention the fact that whenever you have a davening, there's always, inevitably, that especially a place that doesn't have minhagim and protocols, there's always going to be shilas that come up, and you're going to need a rabbi there to handle those shilas and to know what to do about the halachic issues. So certainly, the advent of outdoor minyanim and smaller minyanim have played a critical role in ensuring public safety, and in many instances, probably saved lives. And the value of human life is the most supreme value in halacha. There's no doubt that we were correct to cancel shul for several months when we did. There's no doubt that we were correct to break up into smaller socially distanced groups when we did. It's much more challenging to assess at exactly what time that should change, and each community should figure that out with their own medical and rabbinic leadership. But I think it's important to emphasize the value of what a shul has to offer. If I could just take maybe a couple of more, do I have like 5 more minutes, Rabbi Sean? Do I have
Yes, truthfully, I mean, you only started about 9:35. I mean, it's really based on your time. You can certainly go till anywhere between 10:15 and 10:25 if you'd like.
Okay,
anyway,
so I'd like to share one more idea with you that I think is from yesterday's parsha that I think also speaks to our experience this past year and really speaks to what Lag BaOmer is partially about, at least. You know, when Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and his son Rabbi Lezer emerged from the cave, the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Lamed Gimel tells us they initially couldn't adapt to their surroundings, and Rabbi Lezer would cause everything he saw to go up in flames. It's only when they saw a man, Hahu Saba, carrying 2 hadasim for Shabbos, carrying flowers for Shabbos, and he explained the 2 hadasim, one corresponds to Zachar and the other one to Shomer, the 2 mitzvahs of Shabbos, that they were able to tolerate society around them. Why is it, though, that Zdavka preparation for Shabbos, that was the mitzvah that calmed down Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Lazar? Couldn't any mitzvah that involves the physical world, which is pretty much all mitzvahs, have equally calmed them down? Why is it Zdavka the preparation for Shabbos? And second of all, Tosfos in Chulin Davav points out that whenever we have Hahu Saba in Shas, it's not just some old guy, it's Eliyahu HaNavi. It was Eliyahu HaNavi's job to not only inform Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai that it was safe for them to emerge from the cave, but to show them how preparation for Shabbos is a method of enabling them to readapt to society. Why was Eliyahu HaNavi chosen for this task? And I thought maybe we can answer these questions based on a beautiful insight of the Meshech Chachma. Rabbi Meir Simcha, the Meshech Chachma, understands Shabbos is a time of private introspection. Shabbos is a time where one spends with family and there's not that much interaction beyond our immediate circle. Tzvirish Weinreb explained that Shabbos appeals to the introvert within us. Yom Tov, on the other hand, is designed for the extrovert. Yom Tov, you know, there are different types of people. I'm in the wrong profession because rabbis are better off being extroverts, and I happen to be an introverted person. It's my nature. My wife is an extreme extrovert. She loves going to places and schmoozing with this one and that one, and I'm like, when can we leave? That's just different. I love people. I really do. I love every single person. I just don't like schmoozing all that much, you know, probably walking around the room schmoozing, it's just not my, but there are introverts and there are extroverts. It's not right or wrong to be one or the other. Shabbos is for the introverts, Yom Tov is for the extroverts, connecting with other people, family, friends. It's designed to appeal to the extrovert on Yom Tov. I'll bring you a few rayas. The source where each day derives its Kedusha. In order for Shabbos to exist, we don't need another human being. Hashem set it up, Misheshes Yimei Bereishis, that every 7 days is going to be a Shabbos. In order for Yom Tov to exist, we need human beings to have input, to be koveya, the chodesh, to determine when Rosh Chodesh is going to be. We need a Beis Din to be involved. Second, the halachos of carrying differ from Shabbos to Yom Tov. On Shabbos, we have very strict limits on where we can carry, making sure not to go from Rosh Hashayach to Rosh Hasharabim, Rosh Hasharam to Rosh Hashayach. On Yom Tov, we can interact, we can be much more mobile. Also, the halachos of cooking. On Shabbos, there's no cooking. Whoever was invited from before can come, otherwise we're going to have to eat less if we invite more people. On Yom Tov, we can always have more. We can always have more people and cook more. In fact, that's the According to one opinion in the Gemara, the reason that you're allowed to cook even late in the day on Yom Tov is that Ho'ovi Miklay Archim Chazilei, guests might show up, and then you're going to need more food. So you can always cook more because more guests might come. Even the way Shabbos is celebrated, kavod and oneg, implies an understated appreciation of the sanctity of the day. Yom Tov's key mitzvah is simcha, a more overt rejoicing that's only possible in its fullest sense when you're with other people. Many Rishonim understand, you know, the obligation to be mesameach ishto ubnei beiso beregel, to bring joy to one's family on Yom Tov, is not a way so that for your family to experience simcha. It's a way for you to experience simcha. When you are bringing joy to other people, that brings you joy. When the Rambam defines simchas Yom Tov, he's careful to warn us that when only celebrating with yourself and your family, you're likely not experiencing genuine simcha. That is what the Rambam calls simchas kreso. It's gluttony. It's self-indulgence. Simcha is sharing with other people, and that's the operative mitzvah on Yom Tov. On Shabbos, oneg, enjoy, enjoy. Shabbos is about your own enjoyment. And based on that, we can understand very well why Pesach is called Shabbos by the Torah. Sfiras Omer starts Mimachras HaShabbos, but it's not the day after Shabbos. That Stukim believed that it always started on a Sunday. No, we start Sfiras Omer the day after the first day of Pesach, but the Torah calls it Shabbos. Maybe because Pesach has a little bit of Shabbos in it, in the sense that the first night meal consists of a Karban Pesach, and everyone needs to be pre-registered on a Karban Pesach. And if you weren't pre-registered, it's too late. You can't join in a Karban Pesach. It has that Shabbos type of characteristic. There's celebration, but it comes from private contemplation. In fact, there's another holiday referred to as Shabbos Shabbason in the Torah, Yom HaKippurim, the ultimate day of introspection, of private thoughts, no hint of partying, socializing, or entertaining on Yom HaKippurim. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Elazar spent many years in a state of Shabbos, in that cave. They appreciated how a person can grow from a Shabbos experience. And it's the Sisrei Torah, the secrets of the Torah that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai revealed, which brings us to a Yom Shekulo Shabbos, a day that's entirely Shabbos, the day of Olam Haba. The Zohar in Parshas Naso even tells us that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai led a group of six Talmidim, and they would refer to him, they would call Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai Shabbos, the Zohar says. They refer to him as Shabbos. He's the seventh. That the Mash Shabbos Hashem Kodesh of Rabbi Shimon, Shabbos Hashem Kodesh, the Zohar says. Just like Shabbos is holy to Hashem, so is Rabbi Shimon. Eliyahu HaNavi was chosen to demonstrate that yes, Shabbos may be the ultimate goal, but while Olam Haba is a Yom Shekulo Shabbos, there needs to be a hachana for Shabbos. There needs to be a preparation. And that's done in this world by interacting with this world. We can't bring about geula from inside the ma'ara, nor by burning everything outside of the ma'ara. The true preparation for geula will come about when people bring flowers to their wives on Erev Shabbos, when conversations can take place between people. And that message is specifically taught by Eliyahu Navi, because it was Eliyahu Navi, according to the Navi, who closed himself off from the rest of society after he issued a curse of a drought. It was Eliyahu who was told that he would have to attend every bris mila. Does he come to every Pesach Seder? I don't know. But he does come, Chazal tell us, to every bris mila to see what the Jewish people can become when man and wife come together, when a child is raised for Avodas Hashem within the context of a Torah community. And the message that we're meant to take from the Parsha of the Mo'adim that we read yesterday, and from the celebration of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, which was marred so terribly this year, is that the ultimate goal might be to have this absolute connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a yichidus with Hashem. But that's not our avoda in this world. This world is bivchinas Yom Tov. This world, we have to strengthen each other. We have to experience a Yom Tov. We have to share in each other's smachos, and when necessary, share in each other's sadness. So if I can go back to the original advertised topic to this year, it was something along the lines of COVID, looking back and looking forward. One of the things that we figured out how to do, al karchenu, against our will, we didn't want to have to figure this out, is to figure out how to connect to people and how to uplift people when people were all alone, when we couldn't really physically connect with people, when we couldn't be together with people. And that was because we understood that this world is a Yom Tov experience. This world is an experience for the extrovert. It's a way to bring people together, to look out for other people. One day, each of our neshamos will be Yoshev Began Eden and will be sitting there, Nana Miziv Hashchina. But while we're in this world, we are supposed to be taking care of the Ribbono Shel Olam's children. And we should be very grateful for the opportunity to do so as things open up, and God willing, it should continue to be in a safe way, and it should be Hashem should protect all of His children, that we should be grateful for the increased opportunities to be able to do so in the most natural way possible, by connecting with each other in shul, at communal events, and being able to look out for each other and to ensure the spiritual and emotional and physical well-being of Kol Achenu B'nei Yisrael. And we should see that through that we should arrive Be'ezus Hashem very soon at a day that is in fact Kulo Shabbos. Everyone have a wonderful day, and thank you so much for coming to learn together this morning.
Louis, thank you very